This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com. Oh, yeah!
Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
Kyle Shanahan talk today. We'll have it in an hour. Greg Cosell's going to talk today. It hasn't happened yet, because it happens here.
In 15, looking forward to it. A lot of questions for Greg Cosell.
Well, I think that you ought to pitch to him the idea that you threw out there on Monday, which is that we overrate this roster.
Yeah, I'll ask him.
Throw it to him.
Yeah.
See what he does.
Yeah, and it's hard because if you look at the top line marquee names and you can get eight or nine deep and think, wow, all pros, and what, they have eight guys in the NFL.com top 100, and then you get further down from there, and I think that's where it starts to get a little bit dicey. The right side of your offensive line, your other linebacker, your secondary depth, that to me is where you start to have some questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, depth is a big question, and I also think this, real quick before we go back to the phones, 888-957-9570. You blaming the players or the coaches right now for the 49ers situation? I think that when you're a fan of a team that is succeeding, here's what, you know, you say we overrate the roster. Here's what I'm going to respond with. We underrate the changes. We have a thought in our head that the roster's the same. So you should come back and you should look the same. They're not the same. There's no Dre Greenlaw. There's no Eric Armstead. There was no Talanoa Hufanga to start the season. He just got back to play. And then you can go even more intricate. I'm just talking defense now. You have a new coach. You have players that might not be of the same health that they were at the end of last year, Charvarius Ward. That trickles down to mean that everybody else needs to maybe do more, do less, do it differently. Hargrave is now hurt. You're going to have to fill in for that. And then we look at him and go, look the same as you did last year. Well, it's not the same.
It's not the same, but I'm just talking about this roster, not related to last year. And yeah, Dre Greenlaw being out is a big deal. And they had all offseason to find a second linebacker because teams play nickel a bunch. And so you really only need two linebackers. And when you have Fred and Dre, you're more than good. You're probably the best in football when you go to a two linebacker set. And yet you went with Campbell as your guy, and I know, yep, Greg Cosell has said, don't worry about him, and I wonder if he's still in the don't worry camp after some of the plays we saw him not make on Sunday.
We find out okay, coming up here in about 12 minutes. But let's keep going with you. 888-957-9570. This a player issue, a coach issue? And again, our premise is, yes, the answer is obviously sort of both. But like, where does your mind go first? Players or coaches with some of the mistakes that you've seen out there. Let's go to Anant in Saratoga. Hey, Anant, thanks for calling.
Hey, folks. Good to hear from you. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah.
I think that it's actually a really healthy balance of both.
or maybe an unhealthy balance of both.
I don't mean to hedge. I think that, like, if you just watch that fourth quarter specifically, and I had to suck it up and watch it back the other day just because I was, like, shocked when it happened. But I think, like, the third down executions that had happened earlier in the game just randomly fell apart there. So whatever you want to attribute that to, coaches, players, I personally thought it was, specifically a defensive issue. then I think you can place the blame there. I just think, like, it's a similar feeling to the Denver game 2 years ago where they went 1-2 and it was like, you know, the house is on fire. I think that everyone just needs to take a chill pill, and I think they'll figure this thing out. They got too many, like, good coaches and a lot of good karma built up until this point, so... I think I figured out.
I'm largely with you. I have not lost a whole lot of my optimism. I'm frustrated, but I haven't lost optimism for the season at this point. Let's further this conversation, though, too. Just because a play went bad or just because a game got lost does not automatically mean that there's a problem or there's someone to blame. It is healthy and important to remember that the other team is also paid. And they're allowed to be good. They're allowed to make plays too. So that's not excusing all of it. What I'm saying though is that when something goes bad, I'm going to select certain plays, not all plays, not all negative plays, certain plays where I go, let's talk about that. Is that a player issue or a coach issue? Okay. When the fake punt is successful,
yeah,
player or coach. When Ronnie Bell drops a ball, player or coach. When Brock Purdy fumbles a ball, Colton McKivitz is whiffing on people, player or coach. When Jake Moody misses a kick, you know what I mean? I remember we sort of had this conversation after the Cleveland game last year. Oh, Kyle, you should have driven it further down the field. And it's like, so now a 41-yard field goal is too long? Like, I'm sorry. For me, that as an example, that's on Jake. Now, he was only in his sixth game as a pro.
Yeah, 41 is on the kicker. 55, like, we can have a discussion about it.
Well, but I'd argue 41 in the outdoors rain and 55 in the indoor SoFi aren't really that different.
They're pretty different. I mean, they're not dramatically different based on conditions, but 55-yarder indoor, 55 is still a long kick.
I wonder what a kicker would say about that.
41 outdoor weather.
You got to win a game. Give me windy, rainy outdoors 41 or perfect conditions 55. I wonder. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at just how windy, because I believe the rain had stopped by then.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying.
Field.
This is a weather day.
I get it, but 41 yarder, and that's where you get paid to make that kick. And he kicked
sure.
Michigan, did he not?
Correct.
So, I mean, that for him is nothing.
No,
that's a spring day.
He should make both.
Right. Well, 55 is getting to the range where it's not really a should. I did mention before, 50-plus yard field goals this year, 72%.
72%, and this is indoors.
But this is 55, and I don't know. I'd have to look at 55 if the number goes down dramatically or just down a little bit.
Right. I hear you. Look, I mean, you and I grew up in an age where 55 wasn't even tried. But yeah, like now... That's a should make.
Yeah.
That's a should make.
And as we're looking at player or coach, I'm just looking at the Rams drive where they eat up a lot of clock and they get a field goal. And I'm looking at all these plays where they won almost every play. And yeah, that's on the players because you have to go out there and get a stop. But the defensive scheme and Nick Sorensen, the coordinator, he got out schemed all day long by the Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Are they in a feeling out period? Is he in over his head? TBD? TBD?
Yeah, that's one thing I do want to ask Greg Cosell coming up in 10 minutes about just what he sees on the film.
Yep.
And is it just as bland looking as what I'm seeing?
Vanilla ice cream.
Totally.
I love the flavor of vanilla. I put it in my coffee every day. But if you just stick a bowl of vanilla ice cream in front of me, first thing I'm going to do is start looking around and see what I can put in there with it.
Well, it's even like beyond that, it's diabetic vanilla ice cream. Ooh. I don't know if you've ever had diabetic candy. It's candy, but there's no sugar. So it's really not candy.
It's not candy.
It's called fruit.
Yeah, that's called lipstick on a pig, I believe is what
they
call it.
That's going to be a no for me, dog.
Yeah, I'm out.
Is what it
I'm
is.
Out. It's like non-alcoholic beer. What are we
totally.
Doing? What are we doing over here?
Heineken Zero, not bad.
I'm out. Rolando in Napa. Hi, Rolando. What's shaking?
Hey, nothing much. Just enjoying the beautiful weather here in Napa. Listen to you guys, and I love listening to you guys, and you guys make my day in dealing with this Bay Area traffic, so you guys are doing great jobs. So
well, thank you, Rolando. You're making our day. What's up, man?
Hey, listen, I was watching the Monday Night Game, and I've been thinking for the past couple weeks and months, man, but... You know, everybody says about this Brock Purdy, he's a product of the system. Then why is it that all these quarterbacks who, like, no top high blue chip prospects. Like, I'll put Tua, Bryce Young, Trevor Lawrence, especially Monday night.
Oof.
Why these guys get drafted so high? But then again, then I say to myself, okay, were they just a product of the system because look all the talent around them? Because I'm sorry, but like I'll put the round table. I'd rather have Brock Purdy than any of those guys. And if you guys saw Monday night, Trevor Lawrence is a bad quarterback.
Well, there's no question you'd rather have Brock Purdy right now. Anybody who says otherwise is not really following what's going on. Rolando, thank you very much. I'd also add this, though, about Trevor Lawrence. These three games are the worst of his career in terms of evaluating who he is. Trevor has had coaching problems, and it's very Alex Smith-ish, where the start of his career has been marred by, we're going to give you this coach. Nope, just kidding. How about this coach? Now we're going to run this system. That's very hard on a young player, and he has largely been successful, did win a division, took a team to the playoffs. But now you've kind of got the guy. Remember what we said about 10, 11 games into the year? It's like, okay, Urban Meyer's gone, and you can see it. Trevor Lawrence now is cooking, and you're going to get the best of him. And then C.J. Stroud flew right by him, stole the playoff spot from him, and now Trevor looks lost with a Super Bowl-winning, offensive-style head coach. I don't get it. I don't know what's going on with Trevor.
Struggling.
But he makes $55 million, and if I'm Brock's agent, that's Exhibit A.
Right.
Exhibit A.
Well, and you can't even use him as a comp because he's playing so badly, and his last win as the starting quarterback was against the aforementioned Houston Texans last year in November.
Jeez.
And they won a game with C.J. Beathard, or Beathard, if you prefer, last year. The only win that they had in their final six was when Trevor was out. So, tough times down there in Jacksonville.
You know who Trevor Lawrence plays this weekend, don't you?
No, refresh.
Same team, Houston Texans.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I'm starting C.J. Stroud in the fantasy. He's going to eat against Jacksonville.
Yeah, probably go well.
Yeah.
Probably go well. But then again, what's been happening for 3 weeks? Those ones that look easy, mysteriously, are not so easy.
I just saw a stat that teams who are 5.5-point dogs or greater, 12-3 against the spread.
And what about outright?
It's not quite that good, but it's very good.
It's unbelievable. It's incredible what's happened so far. 888-957-9570. We're circling back to your calls soon. But coming up next, the executive producer of NFL Films. Is the Niner roster overrated? Is Brandon Ayuk actually getting open? What about Purdy's play? What about Juwan Jennings? And sure, we'll get all the way to Devondre Campbell. All of that with the absolute master of film, Greg Cosell, next on Willard and Dips.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Yeah. Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Ready for one of our favorite conversations of the week?
Probably my favorite time of the week, because we look back, but we also look forward.
Yeah, I don't know if the listeners know that. We look at this as halftime. This is halftime for us. Take a breath, take a look at what happened, flush it, and then look ahead to what the Niners are going to do to Ramondre Stevenson, for example, with the New England Patriots. So that's what we're going to do. And we do that with our very, very good friend, the executive producer, NFL Films, joining us on the River Islands guest line. It is Greg Cosell. Hey, Greg, what's going on this week?
Mark, what's happening? How you doing, buddy?
We are fantastic, and you should know, you probably already do, this fan base, for the better part of 6 weeks, is all turned up about Brandon Ayuk. So, he got like 10 to 12 targets. You know, some were called back by penalties.
Right.
I think what people are interested, though, in is he actually playing well? Like, how's his route running and openness look to you?
You know, I think he looks okay. I mean, you know, the guy didn't play for a long time, and now, you know, he's trying to get back in the groove, and I think that takes time. You know, so we'll see. I mean, look, the guy's been in the league now for a number of years. He's been a good receiver. He didn't lose all of his ability. So it's just a matter of taking time and getting back into it, and I think that'll happen. You know, so, you know, that's one of those speculation questions, because there's no way to know the answer to that question. You know, we're not there every day. Like I said, I did a deep dive on him last summer where I watched every one of his targets, and he's a quality NFL receiver. I wouldn't put him in the top probably 5 or 6. You know, I'm sure he wanted to be paid the same way Jefferson is, but, you know, that didn't happen. But he's a really good receiver, and it'll happen. I mean, you know, it takes time.
Yeah, and time is, it's not running out, but you'd love that
no,
time.
No, it's not running
you'd
out.
You'd love that time to come on Sunday, not only for him individually, but for the team as well. When you look at the film and you see 12 targets for Juwan and 10 for Brandon, did the Rams pay more attention to Brandon? Because I haven't seen the All-22, but it seems like on a lot of his routes where he didn't get the ball, they had coverage over the top on him.
Well, I mean, the Rams play a lot of too high shell coverage. So there's always going to look like there's a safety over the top. That's just built into a too high coverage. So that's not specific to what Brandon Ayuk is. That's the way they play coverage. You know, that's foundationally how they play. They're more of a too high coverage team than they are of a single high safety team. So they'll always look like there's someone over the top. So they didn't do that just for Brandon Ayuk. I mean, I know a lot of people said that on the first touchdown to Jennings, which I think was the that was the 13 yarder, I believe.
Yes.
That was the first touchdown
correct.
That ended. Yeah, I mean, the play design was to Ayuk, but Durant did a great job with physical press disrupting his release, because it was a slant route, and a slant route is a pure timing route, and they did it off toss action to the other side of the field, to the boundary. Ayuk had a plus split to the field, so Purdy looked there because that was the design of the play. So that moved the safety over there. And so I'm sure a lot of people who saw that probably thought, oh, well, the safety's cheating toward Ayuk. No, he wasn't. He was reacting to Brock Purdy. And actually, the toss run action really impacted the second level defenders. And that's why Jennings was wide open. But that had nothing to do with the fact that the Rams came out of the huddle and said, let's focus on Ayuk. It's the way it played out, because Purdy looked there. That was the design of the play.
Greg, I guess how much would you say that was the case with Jennings' entire day? Like, how much of it was the plan versus things ended up that way based on the defense?
It's probably a combination of both, because, you know, that's another one of those questions, just being honest, because we don't know what the approach was during the week. I mean, obviously, they're a team that works in the middle of the field. That's where, you know, they run their routes. And Jennings works very well in the middle of the field.
Yeah, and he was terrific in the middle of the field. And the throw that Purdy made for the second touchdown, just the lob throw where Jennings was able to break free. What did you see on
that? You're talking about the 34-yarder on 2nd and 15?
Right, when he was just, you know, really all alone down the left sideline. Looked like the design of that play was brilliant.
Yeah, now that play came off conventional play action. By conventional play action, what I mean is Purdy is under center, not in the gun, which they don't do as much as they used to, although they did it a decent amount in this game. Bell motioned across the formation. Jennings had what we call a reduced split, meaning he was closer to the to the tackle and to the formation. He wasn't split out wide. So he had a reduced split. He ran an what's essentially an inside skinny. And the Rams were in a two-shell coverage, just like I said, and that means the middle is open. This was Purdy at his absolute best. It was great timing by Purdy, hitting his back foot, transferring his weight, delivering, putting the ball right on Jennings' hands. A really, really good play design against what was, I'm sure, an anticipated two-shell zone coverage. That's why it was a reduced split by Jennings, so that when he ran what was, like I said, essentially a skinny post or a bang eight, he was working more like a seam route, whereas if he had run that from out wide, he wouldn't have been working in the open middle, which you get an open middle when there's two high safeties. So that was just a beautifully designed play and great, great execution by both Jennings and particularly by Purdy.
Greg Cosell with us on Willard and Dibbs every single Wednesday here, 95.7 The Game. Greg, it was the first time that we got to get a look at Talanoa Hufanga since his injury. How did he look on tape?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very physical downhill player. He plays on the back end as well, you know, but he's a certain kind of player. He's a kind of a tempo setter when he's at his best, because he comes downhill with velocity, with speed. He's a hitter. So, yeah, he'll continue to get more and more snaps. He'll be the starter with Brown. You know, he'll play both on the back end. I mean, Brown and Hufanga are basically interchangeable safeties. They can both play on the back end, and they can both play in the box. They can be overhang players just outside the formation. So that gives them a lot of versatility on the back end with their safeties.
How concerned should we be by the tape that was put out there by the cornerbacks? Isaac Yiadom gave up a 48-yard PI, and Mooney Ward gave up the big 50-yard bomb to Tutu Atwell. Where were the breakdowns on those plays?
Well, it's funny you say that, because the 50-yarder to Atwell was actually the exact same concept as a 32-yarder to Robinson earlier in the fourth quarter, you know, without going into the weeds and breaking down the whole play because people can't see it, but it was the exact same concept by the Rams. But Ward's a good player. See, the thing you always have to be careful of is it's the NFL. Guys are going to get beat, corners in particular. So that doesn't mean they're bad players. What happened was is Atwell motioned across the formation on the 50-yarder, so he had free access into his route, and Ward was playing with outside leverage, and Atwell is fast. I think he's a sub 440 guy, so he just got on top of Ward, who may not, I don't know what's in his head, but my guess is he may not have been expecting that route. So, you know, he just got behind him, and Stafford made a great throw. But Ward's a good player. You know, the question is really on the other side, because Yiadom is a guy that's been with a lot of teams. You know, you can line him up, there's no question. He can play in the league. But, you know, I think that's one reason why they drafted Green, who got some time, obviously had the holding penalty in the end zone. But we'll see if, as time goes on, if Green is able to win that job, because Green is a physical, competitive, feisty kind of corner who played a ton of press man in college at Florida State. But for now, he may not be ready, so they're going with the veteran Yiadom, who's, like I said, he's played a lot of snaps in this league.
Greg, there's a lot of angst out here about Devondre Campbell. Part of that is just because he for the moment is replacing who we've come to know as a phenomenal player in Dre Greenlaw. But we talked about him last week, and you seem to sort of ring the bell of like, this is a good player, give it time. And he struggled again, particularly with the pass interference there in the fourth quarter. What are you seeing from him right now, specifically in the pass game?
Well, here, let me ask you this. This is not true, by the way, but what if I said he played a great game except for two plays? Would you say, oh, man, well, you know, because he had pass interference, that means he had a lousy game? You know, I think you always have to be careful about one or two plays in a game defining a game and a player. And again, I'm not studying him in great detail on every single play. He's not as good a player as Greenlaw, who I think is a really good player. I remember watching Greenlaw coming out of college, and I believe it was Arkansas, and I really liked him, and a lot of people said he was too small. And I thought, no, this guy plays really, really physically and competitively. So Greenlaw's a better player than Campbell. Campbell's closer to the end of his career. Campbell's always been a good linebacker with a lot of length, because 6'4 is a trait, but, you know, he's just not as good a player as Greenlaw. But you can't just look at the one play and then say, well, that means he's not a good player. There's a lot of plays in games, and don't forget, there's a lot of plays where guys don't play well, and it doesn't impact the overall play, but you don't know the guy didn't play well on that play. You know, so that just happened to really impact the game, and he got beat on that, and he committed a pass interference. And because of the nature of the game, you know, it turned out to be one of those plays that we magnify and probably spend too much time focusing on.
That's a fair defense of the defense on the play, but I have a question for you about the scheme, Greg, because I'm seeing a blitz rate of 14.1% for the Niners, second lowest in football.
And, yep.
You know, by my amateur eye, a pretty milquetoast or vanilla defensive approach. What have you seen through three games as far as the exotic or plain nature of this defense?
Well, I think the thought was, and it might have to change with Hargrave now, I think the thought was that they have a really good pass rush D-line. And if you feel you can rush the quarterback with four and impact the quarterback, then you want to rush with four because that gives you seven in coverage. That's the way a lot of coaches think. Now, not every coach does, but now you're getting into a philosophy, and there's no right or wrong about philosophy. Philosophy is often based on your personnel. And I'm sure they thought that they could create meaningful pressure on quarterbacks in those critical high-leverage situations, third downs, important plays in games. But now with Hargrave gone, and I assume for the year, they may have to reassess that. And we'll see if they do or they don't. But I would imagine that that's a conversation they're having this week, because Hargrave's a very, very good inside pass rusher. He was a really strong bull rusher who drove offensive guards and centers back into the pocket. They don't have that guy now. So now we'll see if they feel that they have to turn up the heat and create some more pressure with blitz concepts. So now we'll wait and see. But the mere fact that they have a low rate of blitz does not automatically mean it's wrong.
Greg, you've always, with your look at the film, you've always, I felt, been impressed by Brock Purdy. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's impossible not to be impressed by Purdy because he knows how to play the quarterback position.
And the reason I want to go back to him is because this particular game, you had a lot of talk out there about, well, now Brock, without a lot of his weapons, what's this going to look like? And it looked pretty darn good, at least
sure
to the naked eye. I'd love to go on a little bit of a deeper dive in terms of what you saw and what you think it means for his abilities at that position.
Well, the way I'd answer that is, I don't think there was any difference in Brock Purdy. I think he plays the same way all the time. I think Brock Purdy is a quarterback that understands exactly what he's seeing pre-snap to post-snap. He's asked in this offense, and this is Kyle's offense, to make a lot of difficult throws between the numbers. It requires absolutely precise timing, absolutely precise ball location. This is who he is. This is how he plays. He plays the same way every week. Numbers become numbers. That's dependent on a given game, how a defense plays you. You know, there's all. Look, if Bell doesn't drop that ball, he has better numbers. You know, games play out certain ways. But Brock Purdy, and I think this is one of the most impressive things about him, is he plays the same way all the time. You don't have to worry about what you're getting when you line up with Purdy. And like I said, I think the first time we spoke when I started with you guys is he's so good at recognizing defense from pre-snap to post-snap. He just has a really innate, natural feel for anticipation throws, like that Jennings 34-yard touchdown. He's just a really good quarterback. It's because he's not physically imposing and he doesn't have a gun. You know, when I hear people say things like, well, this is a game where we have to find out about Brock Purdy, I don't really understand that. I think, you know, given that I've watched every snap of his, and I actually watched 3 years of his college tape, and I'll be the first to admit, I did not love him coming out because a lot of the traits he's shown in the NFL did not show up on his college tape because that's not the way the college game is played. But there's no problem with Brock Purdy, and we don't need to decide each week whether, oh, this is the game we find out about Brock Purdy. I mean, you could almost argue he really hasn't had a game where you went, oh my God, this is a really bad game. Has he had bad throws? Sure, every quarterback in the league has bad throws, but Purdy has not had a stinker of a game.
Do you remember Christmas last year, and does that qualify 4 picks against Baltimore?
And I remember one of them against Hamilton was a really bad read.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was a really, really bad read. Weren't a couple of them tips?
Yeah, two of them, actually.
Yes, there were.
Two of them, I remember the first half.
I tell you what, now I do remember that game. In the first half of that game, the 49ers marched up and down the field.
Yep, that's true.
And yep, and then the game got away from them for various reasons. So, no, I didn't. I can't remember in detail every play from that game. It was a while ago.
Sure.
But I do remember they marched up and down the field in the first half. But like I said, he made a really bad read on the Hamilton interception. And you know what? That's going to happen. He's going to make, you know, he could come out this week and make a bad read. That's going to happen. But, you know, I don't think, like I said, I think we're past the point of deciding whether Brock Purdy is a really good quarterback.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because my partner and I are constantly telling callers that very thing. I want to go back to the Ronnie Bell play for a couple reasons. One, to just tip the cap to the masterclass of a play call because it was well designed and the route was well run. But Ronnie Bell couldn't make the catch, and it had me thinking about the Niners roster overall, and I'm wondering, Greg, if we overrate the roster top to bottom when we say that this roster is the best in football.
Oh, well, I mean, best in football, that's a superlative. I don't know I'd have to think about everybody's roster. I mean, look, I don't know if I'd say that about the 49ers roster. You know, I think that when everyone's healthy, and I think there's now a serious question as to whether McCaffrey even plays this season, and again, I'm not a doctor, but, you know, just the news is not necessarily great. No, I don't know if I'd say that overall they have the best roster in football. I think they have a very good roster, and I think at key positions they have players who can impact games. But if you're talking about an overall roster, you know, again, that's hard for me to answer because I'm not looking at every team's roster right now. But, you know, I think that there are probably some areas where you'd say that they have players you kind of get by with, but you'd love to be better at those positions.
Greg Cosell with us, the executive producer of NFL Films, dives into the tape like no other with us here, Withered and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game, every single Wednesday. Okay, Greg, let's look ahead. The New England Patriots are coming off of a Thursday night, at least offensively, a total stinker. So what do they sort of offer offensively that could potentially challenge the 49er defense in its current state?
Well, they can only play one way offensively and be effective. They can only be a running first football team and then have the hope that Jacoby Brissett can make some plays here and there. That's the only way they can play and be effective. You know, I think it was week one when they ran for whatever it was. Some, you know, Stevenson had the great, great game. They won week one. So they have to be a running football team and a defensive football team. And on defense, they do have some good players, and they're not an easy defense to play against. But as far as offensively, there's only one way they can really play. Now, having said that, it is the NFL. Jacoby Brissett's played in the league a long time. Can he make a play? Of course he can. But overall, they're not going to come out and ask Brissett to throw the ball 40 times by choice. That's not going to happen. Now, if the Niners are able to go ahead 24-3, you know, then obviously the whole game changes. But the Patriots can only play one way and be effective, and they can only play in a certain kind of game if they hope to have a chance to win.
Yeah, they're gonna have.
And lots of crazy things happen, like fumbles,
right.
Yeah, those things you can't predict.
Yeah, they're a team that needs to front run without an explosive offense, and their defense is one that could potentially keep them in the game. Where's their strength defensively? Is it primarily against the run?
Yeah, I don't know, you know, who's injured and who's not, but I can tell you that they've got players on their defensive front that are really difficult. They've got Dietrich Wise, who's been in the league for a while, number 91. He plays D-tackle and DN, really good player, very overlooked, you know, from a media perspective. They've got Keon White, the second-year player from Georgia Tech, number 99, another guy that can play inside and outside. He's becoming a dominant force. They've got Gotcha, who's a really nice player on the inside. They've got Jelani Tavai, who's a really good multi-dimensional linebacker. You know, they've got a secondary. They've got Christian Gonzalez, the second-year corner who missed most of his rookie season. You guys, I'm sure, know him from the from what was once the Pac-12. Really good player. Got has length, speed, really good corner. Kyle Duggar is another multi-dimensional player. Peppers. They've got a lot of these multi-dimensional players that can line up in different spots depending on their defensive calls. So defensively, it's a challenge.
I don't know if the Niners are going to see him on Sunday. He got in at the very end on Thursday. What was your thought on Drake May coming out of college?
I thought he was the toolsiest of all the quarterbacks coming out of college. You know, he's 6'4", 225. I actually stood next to him at the combine on the floor of the dome, and he's a big freaking dude. so I really liked Drake May. I know some of the coaching staff down in North Carolina, and I was told in no uncertain terms that there is no bust factor with Drake May, that the kind of kid that he is, the way he works, the way people gravitate toward him. Now, again, if he does get to play, you know, he's a rookie quarterback. I mean, look what's happened, you know, with Caleb Williams. Look what's happened with Bo Nix. You know, Jaden Daniels has played very, very well, but when you watch the tape, you understand why and how they're treating him. You know, rookie quarterbacks, for the most part, there's always an exception. Certainly C.J. Stroud was an exception a year ago, but for the most part, rookie quarterbacks have a lot of ups and downs. So I imagine if he gets into games early, particularly since he's aggressive in the way in which he plays, that he'll make some mistakes because he'll see things that he hasn't seen before and that he won't recognize.
That was incredible. You gave us toolsiest and big frickin' dude. Now
I like that.
That's some scouting now,
dude.
Greg.
That is a trait. You know, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, because quarterbacks have gotten shorter. They've gotten shorter and more athletic. So now we accept, you know, as part of the equation that a quarterback could be 6 feet, a half inch and still be a really good NFL quarterback. Whereas back in the day, as you guys remember, you know, if a guy wasn't 6'3 or 6'4, people didn't even really consider him to be an NFL quarterback. So May looks like one of those old school guys.
Greg, we love it. We look forward to next week, starting right now.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
All right, there he goes. Greg Cosell, NFL Films. He said there is no bust factor. Does that exist? Like, no bust factor?
Well,
none?
I mean, there is a bust factor, but he thinks that the toolsy nature of him would keep him from being a bust.
Would you enjoy being called toolsy?
I don't know. He's a toolsy player.
Yeah.
He's toolsy.
Toolsiest.
Yeah, and especially if you're a big freaking dude and you've got tools, so that would lead you to maybe not be bust possible.
888-957-9570 is the number. The
he
basis.
Likes Devondre Campbell.
Yeah, he likes him. He likes him.
Yep.
One bad play, Dibs.
Yep, two.
No, he did say, he goes, I'm not saying this is true, but we got to guard against doing that.
Fair.
I will say, it's not like we were calling out his name all day. We called out his name in that play.
Right.
I don't think we're calling his name out for good reasons either, but yeah.
Well, what defensive player were we calling out for good reasons?
Nobody. Not even Fred in this game. Not even Fred in this game. Speaking of Fred, you're going to want to hear something he said today. And that's next, along with your phone calls. You got something? You hot on something? Let's go. Let's go. 888-957-9570 in the conversation we're having today. The Niners situation at 1-2. Is it more a player thing or a coach thing? 888-957-9570 is the number. We're presented by Fremont Bank Full Service Banking, celebrating 60 years, in fact, of full service banking with no compromises. This is Willard and Dibs.
I thought he was the toolsiest.
So we're talking about a tool here. All right, tool. I got another idea for you.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
I mean, Greg's an information guy, somebody who can help us understand things at a higher level. It's not always that conversations with Greg get hot like that.
Yeah.
Conceptual, emotional.
Yeah, and earlier he was talking about a Bang 8. And I was like,
he was.
All right, Greg.
I mean,
you better be careful.
Greg
his word's not mine.
No, Greg has a talent. This is truly a gift because let's be real. There are certain things he's saying that all of you, self included, you got no idea what the hell he's saying. A bang eight?
It's a route, Mark.
I understand that. But, like, when Greg is really rocking it at the core, there are people driving around out there in Nissans and Subarus just nodding. You got no clue what the hell that man's saying. But for some reason, it all kind of makes sense and resonates at a larger level. I could listen to him all day.
Me too.
But I also know that there's a healthy percentage of what he's saying. I have no clue what the hell he's saying.
I do think he is getting better and better at explaining when he drops a thing like reduce splits, what that means. And it's like, okay, I get that. It means he's lining up closer to the tackle. He reduces his splits. And then he, it wasn't a skinny post, but he called it a something skinny.
Yeah, whatever.
Like a skinny margarita.
Skinny latte.
He ran the skinny marg. And, you know, Brock Purdy, that great throw and the third touchdown. And he does a good job of breaking it down at a high level, but also making it so you can understand it.
Like, listen, I fight the urge to do this because y'all know where I stand. Dibs, we all know where you stand. And we're never going to get everybody on our side. But will you please, those of you who are still out there, will you take note of a human being who is beyond objective? Literally flirts with the word robotic with the way that he looks at football. He thinks the idea that Brock Purdy is not really good is laughable. And that's coming from a guy who thought the same thing you did when he was coming out of college, which is, I don't think there's much there. And I commend Greg because he's one of the few people that I've really heard do that kind of an about-face. Plenty of people will compliment Brock, but they weren't in on Brock sucks at Iowa State. They didn't even know who the hell Brock Purdy was or they weren't watching. But Greg does it for a job. He said, I'm not big on what I see here, and now he's watched 2.5 years of Brock Purdy starting at the NFL level, and you can hear in his voice, you can hear in the noises he makes when we bring up his name. He thinks Brock Purdy's phenomenal, and that is from a voice who's got no dog in any fight at all. That's all. Just take note of it. This conversation, I know, and you know, it's not over, but it should be.
Right, and you think it'll never be over, and you're probably closer to being right than me, who thinks that it will be over someday. If he hoists the Lombardi, then all the haters have to go away, unless they win it 17-14, and he throws for a $160, and everyone, see, they won despite him.
What's wrong with that? Tom Brady did that a couple times.
Well, that's Tommy. He won a Super Bowl 13-3 one time. So,
exactly, and he won his first one 20-17 with a field goal at the buzzer.
Exactly, Vinatieri. So you're right that the haters and the doubters will always be there, but when you watch a game like Sunday where he is great and then he's also, he's one part Tom Brady and one part Michael Vick, and he's running around going crazy, and there's so many plays from that game that I love from Brock Purdy, but my favorite was probably the one where he pumped and then he pumped again, and then he did the Superman dive on third down to pick up the first down yardage. That was not only athleticism, but it was heads up and guile in the moment where he had to pump fake the defender twice to get him a little off balance to get the corner. And do you realize how many times he's actually able to get to the corner? That's the thing about Brock that is continuing to amaze me, is his ability to get outside and find that extra yard and get away from defensive ends around the corner.
Yeah. I like, for me, I just don't, I don't really, I do, but I don't. Like, we can coin draftism, we can get into all of that, but at this point, I do sort of, I just, I don't understand really kind of where it's coming from. Boy, Shasky undressed someone this morning about it.
Like, verbally?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not literally.
No, well, I mean, I wasn't here, so I couldn't see if, like, he was, you know, if it got hot in
her. Took it to him, huh?
And he was taking his clothes off. I don't know. But, yeah, like, that whole sort of, like, argument of, like, I know what you guys think you're watching, but Brock's not actually, not actually.
That's the word.
That good.
Brock's not actually.
Actually that good. Everybody's entitled to your opinion. I don't understand where you're coming from. I don't understand what you see. And most of the time when people are coming with that argument, they can't really say it either. What you're really saying is that you have a hard time kind of grasping or believing what you're seeing. So you're looking for other reasons why what you want to be true is true. It's kind of like what everybody does in politics now.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you think Brock's not good, you're one of the people at 6 o'clock at night that turns on a TV station so that they can tell you exactly what you want to hear. And then you go, exactly, there you go. Despite evidence of everything else everywhere all over the place. And then the rinse, repeat.
It's confirmation bias, yeah, is what it is. So you believe something. If you believe that Shanahan is a choker and they've blown 19 fourth quarter leads in his 7+ years as head coach, including the Super Bowl, as a coordinator in Atlanta. So if you believe these things about Shanahan, then you're going to look at the game yesterday, and we talked about who do you blame, players or coaches, and you're going to say Shanahan. His coaches aren't ready, his team wasn't ready, and all the rest of it. And if you think that Shanahan is awesome, then you would look at other reasons why they lost the game. It's confirmation bias, and we all do it,
sure,
all the time, especially when it comes to sports.
Speaking of Shanahan, we're going to let you hear his full press conference from today, literally in about 3 to 4 minutes, okay? And there's some good stuff in there and injury updates for the Niners. We'll let you hear all of that coming up in just a few minutes. Wanted you to hear this as well, especially because I think it applies to the whole player versus coach conversation. Listen to Fred Warner today with regard to kind of what he sees as the problem.
Yeah, no, not at all. I think it's just a matter of everybody doing their job just a little bit better than what we're doing right now. You know, it's not huge changes that need to be made or glaring issues. It's just little things that need to be cleaned up, and that's why I'm excited to get back to work today to fix those things.
Everybody just needs to do their job a little bit better. Now, you could argue he's talking about the coaches too, and maybe he is. You could also argue that's Fred Warner, and Fred will never throw anybody under the bus because he is, for my money, the best leader in the National Football League, if not one of the best players in the National League. How about both? So, and those things are fair. I think those things are fair. Those things are true. But I also think what he's saying to a degree is leaning in the direction of this is a little bit more on the players than the coaches. I think Fred sees that there are very key mistakes happening at key times that have twisted games, even if, like, you should be up by 21, but you're only up by 10 or whatever. You would have eked at least the Rams game out if you didn't conduct a comedy of errors that Fred is suggesting are things that can be cleaned up.
I don't know if he'd use the word comedy, but I know that's the expression. And, yeah, if you're a Ram fan, it probably was a comedy of errors. And you look at the Juszczyk hold on first and 10 when you've got the lead, and all you need to do really is march down and put that game away. You're up 7, and you don't hold. You're 10 yards away from an easy field goal. You hold, you settle for a long field goal, you miss it. Mooney gets cooked for 50 yards over the top, and Greg Cosell with a good breakdown of that.
Yep.
You know, he had outside leverage, and he got beat straight over the top, and he didn't think that route was coming, and good players get beat at times. And then the other comedy of errors that happened from then on, and I think Fred's right in many ways, and if any one of those plays doesn't happen, the Niners probably win that game.
Totally. It was a parlay. It was an absolute, yep, like it was the kind of parlay that you can't hit. 7-teamer.
Yeah, basically.
8-teamer. If anyone, like, don't you think if the, and we can go back to the first half with the fake punt, but especially down toward the end.
Yeah.
From the Ronnie Bell drop to the Jake Moody miss to the special teams miss on the punt return to the ball over Charvarius's head to we could do that about 7 or 8 times.
Devondre Campbell and the PI.
If any one of them doesn't happen, the Niners probably come out on top.
Yeah. Yeah, or at least get to overtime.
At least get to overtime.
Which, you know.
At least get to overtime. All right. We can react a little bit more after you hear from Kyle Shanahan, which we're going to do here in just a matter of seconds. And then I got something for you after that as well to kind of further the discussion on the 49ers. So stay right where you are. You are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station, always live on the free Odyssey app, Twitch and YouTube, powered by First NorCal Credit Union for a low-rate auto loan. Apply online or just ask for First NorCal financing at the dealer.